Welcome to Viewing Angles, the only movie podcast that Lars von Trier falls asleep to at night. My name is Robert Mecki, and I'll be your host, and with me today is...
Dan Leo, the other host.
So, in movie news, not a whole lot happening this week, but there is a bit of discussion we can have about Eli Roth's new movie. If you're not familiar with Eli Roth, he's the director of films such as The Green Inferno... and both Hostel films and also Cabin Fever. Can you guess what his next movie is going to be?
Is it going to involve a guy getting his dick like sliced off? Doesn't that happen in one of the Hostels?
Yeah, I feel like it happens in both Hostels.
Oh man, I can't say I've sat through any Eli Roth movie that isn't Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully he didn't direct that. I can only imagine what that movie would have turned out like. But
it would have been somehow racist.
Yeah, so his next movie...
It's about killing Nazis. How would you make it racist? I don't know, man.
I'll find a way.
Everybody can dream.
Man. So Eli Roth's next movie is a PG horror film starring Jack Black and Kate Blanchett.
It's about... what's it called? Like, the clocks inside the walls.
The house with a clock in its walls. Apparently, it's a young adult novel... Just not read it, not familiar with it at all. But it has something to do with magic and clocks.
It sounds terrifying. I'm sure it'll be awful. But wouldn't this be a great turn of events if Eli Roth's career from here on out was just family, like, spooky movies? It's like, he's like, I'm going to do a live-action Monster House.
Oh, my God.
And other things.
Jesus. Man, I don't know. I feel like we've got goosebumps for that already.
Yeah, that also had Jack Black in it, right?
Yeah, maybe that's his niche, is just slightly pudgy father figures that know how to use magic a little bit.
Yeah, if you count rock and roll as magic, you can throw School of Rock in there.
Oh, all right, side note, this wasn't on the docket, but I think this is news worth reporting on.
Hold on, don't break the illusion. This is all scripted, Robert.
Yeah, this is completely...
We script these beforehand. Don't try to let them think that we're improvising up here.
Down to the syllable, down to the delivery, we know exactly what we're going to be saying during these episodes.
Yeah, 10 minutes before the mics start rolling, we're just rehearsing our last lines.
Mm-hmm. So there's a... Did you ever see the first Pick of Destiny, or the first Tenacious D movie, The Pick of Destiny?
Oh, yeah, I love that. It's a great movie.
Oh, fantastic. They're making a sequel.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But what's... Is it just... Are they going to go back and fight the devil again, or?
I mean, dude, I'm down for that. Like, I don't care. I don't even give a shit what the plot is. Like, I didn't watch the original movie for the plot. I'm down to have the devil come back.
Right, yeah. I don't even really understand. I can't even remember the plot of it. I think it was just, here's the Pick of Destiny. Go defeat the devil with it.
Yeah.
And they play the greatest... That's the biggest joke, is that they play the greatest song ever written.
And they can't remember
to defeat,
it.
Yeah, and they can't remember it. Like... This is the greatest song. This is not the greatest song. This is just a tribute.
Oh, my God. Legendary.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Really got good chops.
I'm excited for that. Significantly more excited for that than I am for Eli Roth's PG horror family-friendly film.
Oh, yeah.
You know, unless maybe it's going to be this generation's Poltergeist.
Mate. What? Was Poltergeist PG?
Yeah, Poltergeist was only PG.
I think it was PG before they had any other ratings.
Yeah, it was. It was PG and R, and they're like, it's not
bad
enough to be R.
That is a spooky movie.
So.
Yeah, that is a...
Yeah, dude, that scene where the father's ripping his own face off in the bathroom, that still haunts me. That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that they probably saw that and are like, nah, kids could probably see that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 80s kids.
Things were weirder when, like, your parents were, like, in scary wars.
Yeah.
And they'd seen things,
like,
and they come back to society.
How do we scare these kids more than their parents already scare them?
Yeah, we gotta toughen these kids up. You know what I saw? I saw people die.
Yeah.
Real people.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so you got war, and then you have the LSD generation. I feel like both of those are probably equally terrifying to children.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, people, like, born in the 50s, or maybe, like, the late 40s, like, not... You know, old enough to go to World War II, but like young enough to really reap the economic benefits afterwards.
Mm.
Moving on.
We're a post-war economic podcast now.
Yeah, we tricked you. You thought it was going to be about movies. Instead, it's about economic development.
We had the game going for 5 episodes.
And it ends today. All right. What's the next? Vin Diesel? I think that's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, Vin Diesel is, he's still doing things in Hollywood, apparently, other than Fast and the Furious. I'm not really sure why Hollywood Reporter even wrote an article on this, but Vin Diesel is starring in a new movie called Muscle. And that's literally all we know about it. There's no plot summary. There's no plot description. We don't even know who else is cast. It's just Vin Diesel.
Is it about, like, muscle cars, you think? Or is it about, does Vin Diesel play one big hunk of, wait, it's a comedy, action comedy. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
What was the last Vin Diesel comedy you saw?
The Pacifier.
I was going to say the same thing, and man, does that movie... I've seen that movie recently, unfortunately, and it sucks. It sucks worse than you thought it would.
I haven't seen it in a while, but if I'm remembering correctly, that's the one where he thinks that the kid he's babysitting is a Nazi, right? Because he's in, like, The Sound of Music.
Oh, yeah, he's practicing to be in The Sound of Music, and he's getting really into character.
Yeah. And Vin Diesel's like, shit, I'm babysitting a Nazi.
Yeah, that part didn't age well.
Oh my god. The alt-right before it was born.
Oh, yeah, and he dyes his hair blonde, and he's like, what is going on, dude? It's like, it's for a play.
Yeah, like, well, the biggest thing is, like, doesn't he, like, he finds, like, a Nazi armband in, like, his backpack or something.
No, the school finds the Nazi armband in his locker.
Oh.
And they bring in Vin Diesel, and it's like, hey, this kid that doesn't belong to you has a Nazi armband. And he's like, is this true? And the guy's like, it's for a play. It's like, a school play? Like, yeah. How did no one know about this?
Yeah, why didn't the school know about it?
I mean, I guess, like, back then, I think they could safely assume that there was just some tomfoolery going on. Like, today, if you find the Nazi armband in a kid's locker, it's like, oh, go to DEF CON, like, 1.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I love that we're criticizing the plot of, 18-year-old movie at this point. That's what we do here.
Is that 18 years old? Oh, my God. The point is, Vin Diesel is not good. He is good in very specific situations.
Yeah.
It was 13 years ago.
Oh, okay. That makes me feel better.
Yeah. It has a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, but 93% of Google users liked it. So there you go, America.
Yeah, man, really lets you know why we're in the situation we're in. Oh, man. I am kind of curious to see what the plot of this movie is going to be. Like, is he going to play, like, a bodyguard? I could see that being the plot of this movie.
I think he's going to play one giant animated muscle.
Oh, just like one
it'll
muscle?
It'll be like Iron Giant, but...
Muscle?
It'll be a body horror movie.
The Iron Giant of Flesh?
Iron Flesh Giant. Yeah.
Oh, my
God.
The Iron Flesh Golem.
I'm in it. I'm in it now. I think we could write it.
Day one.
Yeah. All right. Let's keep this gravy train rolling.
Oh, yeah. Cannes is going on right now.
Yeah.
And as expected, Lars von Trier's newest film, The House That Jack Built, got both walkouts and a standing ovation from the audience.
Which is the most canned thing that could happen.
Absolutely. Dude, I want to go to Cannes so bad just to see, like, what the crowd is like there.
It's probably the most insufferable crowd. Like, it's probably like Pitchfork, but everyone's in suits. I'm sure, but there are also, like, stars around, which I'm sure every, like, movie critic who goes there is like, maybe I'll meet Scarlett Johansson and we'll get married.
That's why people go to Cannes.
They go to see the beautiful people.
I did see one of the guys I follow on Twitter, Your Movie Sucks, great channel, follow him.
Okay.
He got invited to Cannes for the first time ever this year, and he's posting photos of it, and apparently they just have cardboard cutouts of characters on the street in Cannes, and I'm just like, what? I thought... It seems very off-brand to be doing something like that for a film festival as revered as Cannes.
I think it's, I don't know, it's full of freaks. It's all just theater nerds growing up, you know what I mean? And these are like European filmmakers. Like, there's money in it for them. It's just like, just give me like $20,000 and I'll make some weird art house sex serial killer movie.
It'll be huge in America.
Yeah, those crazy fucking idiots. All right. Well, what was it about? It's about a serial killer, right? And that was where like some of the walkouts. Like, I heard people were applauding when it started. Like, before it was like, yeah, Lars von Trier is back.
Yeah, of course then, they were.
And then they saw what is apparently a very brutal and disturbing movie.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you could use those words to describe any Lars von Trier movie, though.
True, like, yeah.
Have you seen any of his previous films?
You know what? I don't think I have.
Okay. I mean,
I avoid them. It's just that, like, they're usually 4 hours long and impossible to find on the internet.
Yeah, that's fair. But man, yeah, these movies, like, I'm not entirely sure what people were expecting from a Lars von Trier movie. Mainly after coming off of Antichrist, I think that might be one of the most disturbing films I've ever seen. And I hear that this is pretty tame in comparison.
Yeah, but Antichrist is supposed to be, like, real, real bad, right?
Yeah, it fucks you up. It scars you forever. You'll never forget Willem Dafoe's genital mutilation.
Oh, yeah. Tell me less.
Make me forget.
No deal. All right. What else? I heard, the early reactions from Solo also came out of Cannes.
Oh,
it's good.
I forgot that was a Cannes. It's an odd movie to premiere at Cannes, too.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be good. That people are saying, chill out, everybody, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like from the trailers, I thought it was going to be good. I don't think it was going to be great, but I think it's like, its reviews are on par with like Rogue Ones. So I think a lot of people are just salty because The Last Jedi was so polarizing.
Yeah, polarizing among people who like hate fun.
And good movies, yeah.
All right, pump your brakes, kid. Pump your brakes. We'll talk about that later. Man, we're talking about Solo. I'm happy that it's coming out. I'm happy to see it. We got a good string of weeks coming up. Some good movies.
Oh, yeah. We got Deadpool coming out. We got Solo. I'm actually not entirely sure what's coming out in June. I don't know if that's a big movie month, but...
Yeah, I'm ready to see some of those A24 movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like First Reformed. I think that's what I'm excited to see the most.
I'm excited for First Reformed. I'm very excited for Hereditary. I hear that's supposed to be haunting as well.
Yeah, very disturbing.
I'm hyped.
I'm ready for it. May 18th is when First Reformed comes out. So it comes out tomorrow. Look at that. Cool.
That's from... the writer of Taxi Driver, right?
Correct, Paul Schrader.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and I love Ethan Hawke.
Amanda Seyfried. It's got everything good going for it.
Interesting that it's using the 4:1 aspect ratio.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's a reason for that, but we'll never know.
Yeah, I'm just kind of not used to seeing it be used outside of Wes Anderson's films at this point.
Yeah, and that's a good almost segue. I think we still got a few more trailers to go through.
Yeah.
But, yes. All right, what do we got next? We got Bohemian Rhapsody.
How do you feel about this?
I don't know. I don't know. It's the trailer was just like, hey, you guys like Queen songs?
Yeah, pretty much. That's kind of how
I
felt.
Here they are.
It's like, this is a movie about Queen.
Yeah, and Rami Malek looks like Rami Malek playing Freddie Mercury. So that's something.
A step below Freddie Mercury?
Yeah, I mean, he looks like he looks smaller on it. Like, you know, Freddie was kind of, he was a little built out.
Yeah.
And Rami Malek is pretty slim.
He's still on that Mr. Robot diet.
Yeah, really. And I just, I don't know. And I don't know if he's, like, we didn't see a lot of him acting in the trailer. It was kind of just like him saying snarky things, yeah. British.
And then lip syncing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I guess I don't really care that he's lip syncing. Like, it doesn't matter that much. But I also, like, I really respect the movies, you know, like Walk the Line or Ray, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, they're singing the song. Like, that's the actor.
Yeah.
And it's like, because I know it's not Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Like, I know that he's playing the character. Just let me, I want to hear him.
Yeah, and so when you hear Freddie audition, Mercury's voice coming out of him as an actor, I'm like, ooh.
I'm like, that's... Because then you're left thinking, like, is that... I feel like they have to, like, publicize a lot if it's him singing or not, because immediately whenever it, like, first starts in a movie, I'm always like, is that the guy? Is he doing that?
Well, I mean, we'll see. It's just something that's coming out in November. I feel like it's definitely going to be gunning for those awards.
Oh, yeah, but you don't have to be a good movie to get, like, a Best Actor nomination for, you know...
Yeah.
Rami Malek, you know, like, Denzel got Roman J. Israel...
Get nominated for that. I never saw that movie, but I heard it wasn't great.
I don't think anybody saw that movie.
The direction looks kind of bog standard. I don't know. I know it. It's Bryan Singer, but he got fired like halfway through filming, right?
Yeah, for being weird. There was disputes. He was saying that like his father or his mother was like sick in England, and so he's like, I gotta go back there.
Yeah,
and they're like, don't do it or you're fired. And he's like, well, I'm doing it. And they're like, you're fired.
Who took over? I don't remember.
Some dude, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's kind of worrisome.
Yeah, that's what. But I mean, it seems like Solo turned out okay. So
yeah, but I mean, Ron Howard took over, and Ron Howard is like,
true. Dexter Fletcher.
Dexter Fletcher. Not familiar with the name.
He directed Eddie the Eagle.
Oh.
Yeah, you know.
That's it?
I mean, other stuff, but that's the big one. Oh, and he's been an actor, too.
I mean, I hope it's good. I feel like Queen fans deserve a good Freddie Mercury biopic, but...
Yeah, and I would have been really interested to see what Sacha Baron Cohen would have done with it. But.
Oh, I forgot that project was in development. Man, I'm bummed now, too.
Sorry to ruin it for everybody.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, speaking of movies, though, that I'm not lukewarm on, Black Klansman from Spike Lee.
Yeah, the first Spike Lee movie that looks interesting in a while.
Yeah, true. What did he do before this?
Chi-Raq.
Oh, that's an Amazon movie.
Yeah, and apparently I haven't seen it, but apparently it's awful.
Oh, really? What a bummer.
Yeah, my roommate saw it, and he said he tried to watch it like 3 different times, and it was just so bad.
He is a very hit and miss director. I'm trying to think the last movie I watched by him. I think it was Miracle at
St. Anna's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say St. Elmo's. I'm like, no, that's the wrong movie.
Miracle at St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah. But yeah, that movie, boring.
Oh, yeah, real boring.
Yeah.
See, but that, and we know that he can do, like, really good movies. You know?
I think The 25th Hour is amazing.
Yeah, or, like, Inside Man, Do the Right Thing. Mm. Even he's got a documentary called Four Little Girls about the Birmingham bombings.
Oh, wow.
It's great. It's a great documentary. Like, it's like, oh, this guy can obviously, he's got talent. He just wants to do things that he's interested in, and he is often wrong.
I wonder if he wanted to direct the Old Boy American remake, or if that was just like a studio thing he got roped into.
Apparently he wanted to. Like, apparently that was a project that started out good, and then the studio came in and, like, messed it all up.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I could, like, if he wanted to do a proper adaptation of the source material, I feel like the studio was going to come in eventually and be like, this is too weird. You gotta change some shit.
Yeah, because originally they recreated that Hammer hallway scene.
Yeah.
And the studio, like, made them, like, cut it up. It was one long take, and it was even more extensive, apparently. And Josh Brolin had to, like, train for, like, weeks to do it. Like,
If any movie deserved a director's cut, that's one.
Yeah. But this one looks really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got Adam Driver, who's always good. It's got Denzel Washington's kid. I cannot remember his name.
Yeah. I think it's John something Washington.
Yeah, I believe it.
But yeah, I've only seen him in Ballers before this, but I really like him in Ballers, so I'm excited to see his work in this.
Yeah, except I'm very interested, and it looks very good. It looks very cool. The response has been really good. His name is John David Washington. Sure. It looks interesting, but it's about John David Washington. He's like the first black police detective in Colorado Springs. And he just calls up like the local KKK, and he's like, "Nah, can I be a member?" And they're like, "Yeah, sure." And he's like, "Oh, I didn't think they'd go for this."
Yeah.
And so Adam Driver pretends to be his character that he made up, and tries to go undercover with the KKK.
Man, and I love that this is based on a true story.
Oh, yeah, that's the best part
like,
about it.
I feel
it.
Like if this wasn't based on a true story, nobody would buy it. Everybody would be like, oh, that's some Hollywood horse shit.
But this is just Spike Lee being weird.
Yeah, this is just some liberal agenda bullshit. man, though, I love that they cast Topher Grace as the Grand Wizard. I forget
David
his
Duke.
Name. Yeah, David Duke.
David Duke. Topher Grace and David Duke, which I've been saying for years, really.
Yeah. You could tell as soon as you saw him on that 70s show. You're like, he's going to...
As soon as I saw him in Traffic, I'm like, that guy's got a dark side. Wow. Yeah, it's a deep cut. Traffic's a great movie.
Man, I wonder how comedic this movie is going to be. Because I think the trailer portrayed it in a pretty comedic light. But I feel like there's obviously some pretty dark subject matters that it's going to be tackling.
It'll be a dark comedy. I love at the very end of the trailer, they start going... America first, America first.
Yeah.
And you can tell that they put that in the trailer very specifically to make some commentary.
Make some points, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
America first.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited for this. I love Adam Driver. He's been on such a hot streak.
Yeah, it seems like he can't really do any wrong, which is very strange.
Yeah.
Because nothing about him, like, whenever I see him, I'm always like, he's good, but I'm never like, I don't know, my mind's never like blown by him, but he just like totally gets into it.
Yeah.
You know?
You buy him in whatever role he takes on.
Yeah, he's almost like a John Cazale. Like, do you remember in he plays Fredo in Godfather Part 2?
Mm.
And he was in Dog Day Afternoon, and he was in The Deer Hunter. He had a good string of movies where he was just always like really good, but never. You're giving me a look, Robert.
I know. He's like, I am.
Yeah, you're trying to remember what he looks like. He just looks like a normal dude, and he was never like the star of the movie, but he was always like, oh wow, he's doing real good supporting work, and they just died. And I feel like this is what Adam like.
This is what Adam Driver is going to be taking.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully he doesn't die. But yeah. He's already, you know, basically have starring roles in movies.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, he is. He's Kylo Ren. That's one of the biggest roles you can get out there. So.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm really curious to see his
worked with Martin Scorsese. He's working with Spike Lee. Like, he's worked with, like, almost every, you know, modern great director.
Wait, who did Adam Driver... What movie did Adam Driver work with Martin Scorsese in?
Silence.
Oh, my God. I completely forgot that Martin Scorsese directed Silence.
But yeah, it's a great movie.
I was also pretty, never mind.
pretty long and boring because it was in a different language for some of it.
I mean, there was that. I'm just saying I saw it in L.A. After things were legalized there, so.
Oh, right, yeah, that's it's a sleepy movie for sure.
Well, I laughed more than I think I should have in that movie.
Yeah, movie about religious persecution, probably.
I'm sure the audience loved me.
But there were actually some funny parts. It's a surprisingly funny movie.
The main part that I couldn't stop myself from laughing at was when the... what was it? The Inquisitor? Was that the Japanese guy's name?
I don't think that was his name.
Well, not his name, but like his title.
Sure, yeah.
When he was talking to Andrew Garfield, and he just sighs for like 45 seconds straight, and I swear to God, it looked like he was deflating. And I thought that that's what was going to happen. Oh my God.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, so that's my anecdote about silence.
Yeah, okay, well... We'll do a deep dive on that someday.
Yeah, when we do our Martin Scorsese run the series.
Yeah, we'll do that in The King of Comedy and nothing else. All right, next trailer, Mission Impossible Fallout.
What did you think?
I'm excited. I just want to see Tom Cruise. Like, you could put Tom Cruise in a food processor and I'd watch that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like at this point, we're just seeing bad things happen to Tom Cruise. And I'm into it. I would like the stunts. The plot doesn't matter. If you could tell me the plot of any of the Mission Impossible movies, I'll tell you why it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Man, I'm excited to see Tom Cruise break more bones.
Oh, yeah. Did you see, like, the up-close footage of his, like, ankle breaking?
When he jumped out the fucking window?
Yeah. Ooh, man, it looks real bad.
Yeah. And he went on filming after that. It's like, all right, dude.
They got the shot, and yeah, that's been in every trailer.
I guess that's what Scientology does for you.
Gives you, steel bones.
Hmm. I wouldn't call him steel. Still broke.
Hey, steel breaks, man.
Man. But yeah, I'm excited
Insert
for this.
Jet fuel, whatever. All right, but I'm excited because it looks different than the other ones because they're giving, like... Henry Cavill has got it's like a one-on-one role, and they also have got the big bad guy too.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't care about the big bad. I feel like any physical confrontation between them is going to be a joke. And I think they're already it's weird that they're reusing the same villain from the fifth one.
Yeah,
but
and that's what I'm wondering. Like, how it seems like obviously they're like Henry Cavill is going to be the big. He's going to somehow be the worst bad guy.
I feel like Henry Cavill's going to come around onto Ethan's side by the end, and then they're going to team up.
You think
up.
So?
Yeah.
I could believe that.
Yeah. I really like Henry Cavill's mustache in this. I think it looks great. It looks
CGI'd on.
Yeah. This movie, the fights look so physical, though.
Yeah, that's what I like about the Mission Impossible movies that I don't get from a lot of other movies is the physicality. Not so much like there's a kinetic movie, but you can tell that people are doing their own stunts. You can tell it just has a different look. Like, there is something actually on the line,
yeah.
Which is something you don't get from like Marvel movies. You don't get from a lot of action movies. You actually, and I, you know, it's a credit to Tom Cruise and how he can just really turn a movie around by being, I'm going to be in the movie. I'm going to do the stuff. And it makes a huge difference, I think.
Yeah. I feel like a big part of it, too, is, like, Ethan Hunt is a hero that is actually willing to, like, get pretty seriously injured. And I feel like that's taking a page out of Jackie Chan's action book, at least, like, his Hong Kong films. Because I think the best moments in any Mission Impossible movie are when he's just fucking limping along and struggling to get to the end point.
He gets thrown against a car or he has, like, a big drop or something.
Oh man, it just makes the hero so much more relatable, which is hilarious to think about considering everything that he's able to do.
He is like an insanely just fit guy. Apparently he's a pretty big like adrenaline junkie.
No shit.
Yeah. But you can tell, like, just you look at, you know, one of his really great early films, like, let's say, I don't know, Cocktail, and then you see
that's
him
a great
now.
example.
It's a great example. You see him now, and his face looks... He looks fucked up. Like, he looks like he's taken a beating.
Yeah.
Like, his face is being held together with just, like, duct tape and, like, saliva.
Yeah. And not like, taking a beating from someone. It looks like the world has beat the shit out of him. And it's because he paid it to.
they paid him.
Yeah. That's true.
Man. Yeah, he doesn't have the same, like, Brad Pitt, like, oh, he's attractive but older now,
like,
or
pretty
George Clooney.
Yeah,
he's got, like, the, oh, wow, this guy has been, like, the army or something, like, and, like, been falling on shit his whole life.
Yeah, he's been breaking his ankles.
Breaking his ankles, breaking his nose. His nose is, like, in, you know, he looks like Owen Wilson at this point.
Yeah. That was the one thing. I think Tom Cruise's dedication to his stunts was the one redeemable quality from the Mummy film from last year. Because goddamn, was that movie terrible. But
I didn't see it because I have self-respect.
Yeah, more than I do, at least. But goddamn. He gives it his all. And that's kind of why I was hoping it was going to be at least a good time. But now they fucked that up.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited. I'm waiting for it. It comes out July, like, 27th, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
We will be waiting anxiously for that. I'm gonna try and watch all of them before that one comes out.
I feel like I do that every time a Mission Impossible movie comes out.
They're very easy movies to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, July 27th.
I mean, I feel like you can skip two, which is sad.
Hold
because,
on. Two is hilarious. Two is so
hilarious,
much fun.
Hilarious, but not intentionally.
Oh, I think it is pretty tongue-in-cheek.
I don't know if John
I think you
Woo
go back
do...
hold on because I got opinions on this. this podcast is gonna be an hour and a half long. Mission Impossible 3 is only good because of Philip Seymour Hoffman. Other than that, it is a stupid movie that doesn't make any sense.
They're all stupid and don't make any sense.
Right, but especially number three. Two at least leans into it. Like, they've got two takes advantage of, like, oh, it's one mask. No, it's another mask. Like, it is so much of that.
Yeah.
And so much slow mo and doves. Like, John Woo is the perfect person for the Mission Impossible series, and I won't argue about it.
When he does the nolly on the motorcycle and the doves just come out of nowhere, and you see it in slow motion as his hair's flowing. Oof.
That is, if Mission Impossible had a mood board, that image would be on it.
I never expect you to
name
be
a more
defending
iconic scene.
Mission
Hold
Impossible
on, name a more
2.
Iconic scene in a Mission Impossible movie than that.
When he's hanging off the Burj Khalifa.
Sure. Yeah. Why not? I don't know.
Yeah. No dubs though.
No doves, no insanity, whatever. Let's let's transition to the next part.
Moving on to
we're
a
gonna
different
be,
animal.
Yeah, what are we going to review today, Rob?
I love dogs.
Now, did you say I love dogs or Isle of Dogs?
I don't know. How does Wes Anderson want it to be pronounced?
I think he wants you to say Isle of Dogs.
Isle of Dogs.
You know, it's funny that the Isle of Dogs is a real place.
What?
It's not in Japan, though, fun fact. It is in the East End of London.
And it's just a garbage island with dogs on it?
No, I mean, no, it's called the Isle of Dogs.
Oh.
I don't know why.
Hmm.
I assume dogs is Old English for...
Dogs?
Docks. Yeah. Dags. Yeah.
Man, I thought you're about to make me real sad. I'm glad it's not an actual garbage island that dogs are forced to live on.
Yeah, first of all, no one could force dogs to do anything. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, they could. I could definitely see the Brits pulling some shit like that.
You think the dogs wouldn't swim back?
No. At least the dogs I've known wouldn't. But I don't know all dogs.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to speak for all dogs, so.
Yeah, not all dogs, first of all.
Hey, man, the British
Second
Channel is
all,
cold as fuck, though.
It's not on the British Channel. It's on the East End of London.
Oh, well, I don't know where the fucking Isle of Dogs are. I don't know what they do in the Isle of Dogs. I don't know what's
Anderson's
Isle of Dogs.
I don't think
Isle
they do anything. I think it's just a name. You know?
The Isle of Dogs.
All right, Rob, how do you feel about the movie?
I really liked it.
Let's start with you.
I think
oh,
it's
great.
Probably
yeah.
one
right,
of my
podcast
favorite.
Podcast over, everybody.
Yeah, sorry. I think it's one of my favorite Wes Anderson movies. I think I liked it more than Fantastic Mr. Fox. So, I mean, out of
I
the
would
two
agree
stop
with
motions,
that. I think I liked it, but it's one of my least favorite, I think.
Really?
So far. I think he forgets. He does the thing that he's always in danger of, which is getting too lost in, like, the artistry or, like, how Wes Anderson, his movie's going to be.
That's what I want.
Yeah. I like, you know, they're all like the kitschy like stuff, but I feel like it's got some really good moments when, you know, with like the stories about the dogs.
Yeah.
Anything going on with the people, I didn't care about at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think the side plot with the exchange student was kind of unnecessary, but I did really like, I really liked the scene in the, are we doing spoilers?
Be vague. Let's not do spoilers.
Okay, well, the scene in the bar with the exchange student.
Right.
I thought that was really well done. I thought I got a solid kick out of that. I got a hoot out of that.
Yeah, and I think in having Yoko Ono being
the lab assistant
is good. There were a lot of Japanese, like apparently famous actors who are in the movie.
Oh yeah, and they only spoke kinda, like, Japanese.
Sprinkled in throughout. Yeah, but I felt like the strongest part was the interactions between the dogs, and even between Atari and his and the dogs.
Yeah,
that was the only interaction that I really cared. Those were the only interactions in the movie that I felt like carried any kind of weight. And I thought Bryan Cranston's dog, Chief, he was very emotive, and I, you know, sympathized a lot with. I got to a certain point towards the end of the movie where I'm like, oh, these dogs are people, which is every time there are talking dogs, the dogs are people. You know, like, you know what I'm trying to say? The dogs are us. We're the dogs. The people are not us. The people are just a way to communicate the dog's story.
They're an abstraction of our flaws. Dogs are,
yeah, exactly. And so when he, you know, when he's like, I bite. I don't know why I bite, but I bite.
Yeah.
You're like, all right. Yeah. I'm, you know, dog stuff that's relating to human stuff. But I feel like it got lost in all of like the weird kitschy bullshit that Wes Anderson loves to put in his stuff.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
I wouldn't describe any of Wes Anderson's style as like kitschy. I feel like, I don't know.
He's like, I feel like he is total, like, it's like a diorama.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's not like,
I don't think he's not trying to like fake or like, I don't know, counterfeit any of his artistic choices or any of the motifs he has in his film.
Yeah, no. But I think that is like the whole point, is that he is putting in these like real emotional centers to his movies. And he's just surrounding this with this kind of, you know, whimsical,
yeah,
artistry or camera movements or costume design. It's supposed to clash with like the inner turmoil that's going on with the characters. It's supposed to be idiosyncratic. It's supposed to be in opposition of one another. He makes pretty adult movies.
Yeah, I don't think having all of his I don't think whimsy necessarily has to be like an antithesis to mature themes.
I don't think it has to be the antithesis, but I think the way that Wes Anderson uses the, especially with his stop motion stuff, he uses the artistry and kind of the storybook quality of the art and the design to play against the story that he's trying to tell. And because he's kind of cutesy,
yeah,
but his most, I would argue, his like most mature movie is The Royal Tenenbaums, and that's my favorite one. There's some heavy stuff that goes on in the Royal, you know.
I was going to say that or Grand Budapest.
Grand Budapest is also very, that kind of shakes it up a lot. Like, it's, I feel like Royal Tenenbaums is like, this is what this movie's going to be.
Yeah.
And Grand Budapest Hotel is like, you suddenly realize what the movie is, like maybe like a third of the way through it. And you're like, oh, wow, the stakes are real.
Yeah, there were quite a few gear shifts in that. And I feel like that makes it more exciting to watch as a movie.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think Grand Budapest Hotel is a really good example of his ability.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think maybe just on a technical level, I couldn't help but admire Isle of Dogs. And I think...
Agreed, yeah.
Storytelling-wise, yeah, it wasn't... It didn't have nearly as much depth as, like, I think his best films. But I do think that as far as a I don't want to say kids movie because it's not really a kids movie. But as far
it
as
it could
an
be,
animated
it's the
movie,
most. I feel like it's more kiddie than. Maybe it's a little less than Fantastic. Nah, I'd say it's on par with Fantastic Mr. Fox.
See, I thought this was more mature than Fantastic Mr. Fox, and I think it's because the threat of death was something that loomed over this movie, and I don't think that was ever really something that concerned me in Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it makes sense.
It felt real in this, which was just surprising for, you know, a stop-motion movie.
Yeah, and I know, like, the movie's gotten controversy for the way it treats Japan. I almost think that, like, the fact that it was in Japan was one of the, like, it was one of the more distracting parts about the movie of just, like, trying to decode. And I think that's specific. I think there is a specific message he was trying to send with having the dog speak English and the people not speak. People speaking Japanese unsubtitled unless it's being translated specifically for us.
Yeah. I think that, I don't know. So some people have been saying that he's using like the Japanese setting as set dressing. But I feel like filmmakers should be allowed to set their movies wherever they want. And it's not like he treated their culture disrespectfully. Like he did his research. excuse me. And clearly had to put a lot of thought into how he filmed certain sequences so that they weren't offensive or like half-assed. And the one that really comes to mind is just the entire intro drum sequence. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Oh yeah, that was really cool. Always like when stop motion drumming happens, like stop motion instrument playing. Yeah. It's always interesting. But one thing I read, you know, I was reading around a little bit trying to get like some more perspectives. And, you know, I read some that were like, this is cultural appropriation, blah, blah, blah. And one that really struck me was one from The New Yorker. It's the title is What Isle of Dogs Gets Right About Japan. It's written by a Japanese author, Moiko Fuji. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I assume not. So please send all your complaints to Brian Williams at NBC.
How very white of you.
Yeah. And... But there, it was saying how there are a lot of actually like Japanese jokes in there. Like there's like puns written into like puns written in graffiti, like in kanji. Mm-hmm. And there are different like voice actors that are very like famous in Japan. I remember there's one Mari Natsuki, who is the voice of Yubaba from Spirited Away, is the host mother who... you know, talks down to whatever the foreign exchange student's name was.
Yeah, it says a lot about her character.
Yeah. And, like, they don't subtitle, but it's in Japanese. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of things going on. And there's, you know, references to, like, Japanese, like, daytime TV and, you know, all these different things. So it's like there are things that Japanese viewers, when they're going in, they would not – or they would see that other people would not see.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he is making a point about translation and how things are getting lost. And that is part of like the movie. At the very end, there's a scene where the foreign exchange student, she talks to the crowd and she's talking to them in English.
Yeah.
And they all understand what she's saying and they're talking amongst themselves in Japanese and they only talk to her in Japanese. And so then it's like, oh, you're the one, like, the Japanese people are all have their own, like, agency beyond of what we thought that they did.
Yeah.
Like, they all get what's going on. It's everybody, it's all the white people who are left out of this larger, like, narrative of what's going on.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like it's almost like, it's like a rebuttal to, I mean, that's kind of why I have a problem with the idea that people are saying that it's just set dressing and that it's cultural appropriation. Because I feel like it's... like the statement of the movie is that there is a culture that we are not a part of. And if we have any input on it at all, it's through a very specific lens that requires translation.
Yeah, exactly. And there is no one translate, like translating is such a imperfect science. Like you're never translating really. You're not going one to one.
Yeah.
You are interpreting what they're saying and you're trying to give that back in your own language. Because the way that, you know, different languages work, you're not saying the exact same thing. You're just readapting the structures of grammar and words into a different language, which could end up with like a completely different meaning.
Yeah. And I like that. I feel like that's also reinforced by the fact that there are multiple translators in the movie and that it's not just one translator the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. I think the movie does a good job with its attention to detail in the Japanese cultural aspects of it. But I can see why people would think it's offensive, especially more, you know, people who are used to seeing aspects of Eastern culture whitewashed and taken advantage of, you know, for the sake of some weird white dude. which Wes Anderson totally is.
Last Samurai Syndrome.
Yeah. Oh man. Exactly. But I mean, you know, that stuff has been going on. I feel like the Western fascination with Japan has been going on, you know, ever since that we were connected. You know, they've got, you know, the James Clavell novels like Shogun, all about a white guy going in Japan and being like, what's, you know, this is so weird, isn't it? And then being like, we bathe and you don't. What the fuck is wrong with you?
I mean, hey, and Silence.
Yeah, Silence, you know, even that's, you know.
The clash of Western religion, or I guess Western religious philosophy and Eastern religious philosophy.
Yeah, Lost in Translation, you know, like this is, it's been going on for a while.
I've actually never seen Lost in Translation.
Really? Yeah. It's a good, slow movie.
The reason why, I love Bill Murray, but I can't really get behind Sofia Coppola because I watched The Virgin Suicides and I fell asleep multiple times.
This is her best movie, like by a long shot. Like it's, you know, the best thing that she did, she's done since Die in The Godfather Part 3.
I mean, I believe
spoilers for a 30-year-long movie, a 30-year-old movie, everybody.
There's a reason that it has such reputation, I believe. So.
Godfather Part 3 or Lost in Translation. Godfather Part 3, not that bad. I'll say it.
Yeah, it's like, what, 7 out of 10?
Yeah. It's just a regular good movie. It's not. It's just because,
it's
like,
just
the first
such
two
a come
were
down. Yeah.
Classics, yeah. But that's what you need. You need a come down from, like, you don't want the third movie to be the best.
Yeah, you need a Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, something to like ease you into the fact that there won't be any more of these.
Yeah, finish your malt liquor.
This is actually Pilsner Urquell. Ah. It is the first Pilsner, so take that and shove it up your ass.
It's the first Pilsner?
It's the first Pilsner. It's the original Pilsner. That's what it says.
The first Pilsner.
Yeah, you see that?
Damn.
So check your privilege.
Is that a pun because it comes from Czechoslovakia? Because if it is, go fuck yourself.
I don't even know that, yeah. Does it? No, wait.
We need to figure this out. We'll get back to movies in a second. Check. This is important.
100% check. Yeah, it says that on the side. So, it could be Czech. It could be Slovakia. Who knows, man?
Or it could be Czechoslovakia.
Czechoslovakia doesn't exist anymore. That was my whole point.
Oh, man. I don't know enough about geography to know what countries do and don't exist anymore.
Well, it's separated into two countries. One called the Czech Republic, one called Slovakia.
Oh, okay.
You think there was a Czech Republic, Slovakia, and then Czechoslovakia?
Yes! Man, I've seen weirder shit happen. Trump is president.
Yeah. Is that, that's just like anyone's excuse for being confused?
Pretty much. Anytime
like,
I say
hey,
something,
listen.
Yeah. Anytime there's something that I don't know about the world, I'm just like, hey, man, I've seen weirder shit happen.
Weirder shit happen to me not understanding geopolitical lines or whatever. It's like, you know how when people get hit in the head and they like come to
and they can speak another language?
No. No. They. What? No. I don't believe that that actually happens. Second of all, where would they get the information? Never mind.
From watching anime.
Yeah. Anime subs, not dubs. And no, someone gets hit on the head and they come to and they start asking them questions.
Yeah.
About like to establish like, hey, do you have brain damage? And one of the ones they say is, who's the president? And I can imagine right after Trump won, where they're like, Donald Trump, and like, oh no, do I have brain damage?
Yeah.
Oh, like, shit. Nah, man, you just wish.
Yeah.
That guy from The Apprentice? Oh no.
Fuck, the dude from Home Alone 2?
Yeah, exactly. It's right down there. All right. Have we said enough? I liked all of the performances. I liked it's again the plot that I thought it was did a better job of being subtle. Usually in a Wes Anderson movie, around like the end of the second act or the beginning of the third act, they have like a big kind of emotional reveal, a very like emotional moment.
Yeah.
And it's become a little cliche at this point. Just like, oh yeah, he's going to tell him about how sad his life is or whatever. But this one really kind of like coaxed it in throughout the whole movie. I thought that was done really well.
Yeah.
I just thought there were some extraneous parts. This could have been an hour long movie and I would have really enjoyed it, I think.
Yeah. Again, I think you could cut out the entire exchange student subplot and it wouldn't be any less of a movie. I will say, I think this might be Wes Anderson's most beautiful movie. I think that his scene composition is the best it's ever been here. And the color palette was fantastic.
Yeah. I'm gonna agree with you on all of these points. I'm personally gonna say it. Obviously, it's got that film cred of it's Wes Anderson, so you have to see it, which is a great way to get nerds to see your movie. Is just make like 5 really good movies, and then like, well, now we have to see it.
Yeah, or just change your name to Wes Anderson.
Yeah, exactly. If your name is Wes Anderson, I'm seeing your movies. Yeah. How do you think Wes Craven got famous?
Before Wes Anderson started making movies.
Yeah, he's like, you're telling people with my freaky name can make movies?
Damn!
Here goes nothing. I'm going to film my diorama.
I'm going to become friends with Owen Wilson.
Yeah, exactly. And Luke Wilson. All right, no, point I was making, it's got the film cred. If you're in a film, you're going to want to see it. I think it's got more film merits than it does. Actually, I'd say it's probably pretty even on both. I'd say it's a movie you don't need to see in the theaters. I'd say maybe like sit back and rent it, wait till it comes on Netflix or whatever.
Oh yeah, it depends on how big of a fan you are of Wes Anderson, or Japanese culture or dogs. But
right, yeah, if you love dogs, see this movie, I guess.
Yeah,
I love dogs.
I love dogs.
Yeah. So I guess we should have gotten a guest commentator who liked cats.
Yeah. Fucking, I don't know. I don't trust people that like cats. I don't want them on the show.
All right. All right. So you heard it here first. I'm going to say wait till it comes out on streaming services or rent it. And Rob, it sounds like you want people to see it in theaters.
I'm going
to
say see it in theaters if you can. I know it has like a wide release, but I don't know how wide that actually is because it's a Wes Anderson movie.
This came out. I saw this in the Regal theaters.
Oh, okay.
So
cool. So I recommend going to see it if you can. If you're a fan of beautiful films, or if you're a fan of stop motion, which I know is a dying art, so I think it's seeing it is one way just to support.
When was it ever alive?
60s.
back before they had real effects.
No, I think like, in the 90s, like, you know, you had all the Tim Burton Disney stop motion features that were pretty cool, and those kind of died out with Frank and Weenie.
I think you're just thinking of Chicken Run, which was DreamWorks.
No, James and the Giant Peach, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I remember all those now.
Yeah, so Wes Anderson is still, Wes Anderson and Leica Studios, the two people left doing stop motion animation, and they're both great. And
yeah, keep them alive.
Yeah, I recommend seeing this film, because I love dogs.
Well, it looks like we've run a pretty long time in this podcast, so we are going to wrap it up. No feature today. You're going to have to wait till next week, or you're going to have to listen to the other podcasts that we have already recorded. So for now, I'm Dan Leo. You can tweet at me at Dan Leo, at the Dan Leo Show on Twitter. You can also follow me on Letterboxd, where I do my little reviews. It's D Leo on Letterboxd. That's all you got to know. Follow it. And you can listen to the podcast at viewingangles podcast.com. I'm Dan Leo, and this motherfucker
is Robert Mechie. You can follow me on Twitter at Robert Jr. JR. And you can also follow us now on Instagram at Viewing Angles. We'll be posting some shit. It's going to be good.
Pictures of Robert's mom.
It's going to be good.
Only that.
Don't worry about it. Just trust me.
It's going to be great. It'll be so good.
So good.
How good? It'll be so good. All right. That's all from us next week. This week. Next week, we'll be talking about Deadpool. Mm-hmm. So you're going to want to listen to that, you filthy animals. God bless you. Keep watching movies. This has been Viewing Angles, the only movie podcast. And we are out of here.
Good night, Lars von Trier.
Bye.
Bye.